Hey guys, what is up? Welcome to another episode of The Creative Exchange. It's your girl, Sarah Dietschy, rhymes with peachy. I am with a very special guest today, Roberto Blake. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Yes, hopefully everyone knows who you are, but for the two people who don't, how do you describe yourself? Because you do a lot of things.
It's a lot, and sometimes it feels overwhelming to people, but the way I put it is I'm a creative entrepreneur, public speaker, and a YouTube educator. I think that kind of subs me up a little bit. For a little bit of context for some of the things we probably get into, they should probably know that I'm a YouTube certified expert. I'm speaking at VidCon this year, and that I also am the founder of Awesome Creator Academy.
Heck yeah. So if you guys are curious about YouTube, maybe you are a YouTuber, I think we're going to dive into some really, really good info. We might rant a little bit about YouTube. Yeah, I might be selfish and ask Roberto for some advice, because I think that's what you're best at. It's so cool seeing people on Twitter being like, I just saw Elise Swopes.
Yep.
She just tweeted, like, just had an awesome conversation with Roberto Blake.
Yep.
So it's cool to see all of my creative friends kind of connecting with you in some way.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun for me too.
Yeah. So just to kick things off, what is something that you are super into right now? Whether it's a YouTube strategy or a specific platform, or maybe a specific thing in the creative world or business world that you are attacking right now.
I'm attacking Instagram. I'm all okay. For the gram right now.
The gram.
Attack on gram.
Why the gram?
So one, I think Instagram is the platform with the most emotional equity right now. That's the way I would phrase it. Like, we are very wrapped up in Instagram from a sense of looking there for things that inspire us, things that trigger us creatively. It's easy to consume, it's accessible, it's on our phone. So both to consume and to create, I don't think there's a better, more accessible platform that's always with us. I think it's really a mobile first platform. They're looking to expand it and actually integrate desktop more.
Did you see the news recently?
Yeah, no, did you hear my announcement? I'm going daily now.
On the gram?
I'm leading up to that whole long form content announcement.
Do you think people are going to stick around their phone on Instagram and watch a 30-minute video?
See, well, it depends. I mean, I've been getting a lot of success with that on my live streams on Instagram stories as it is. And it depends on who does it and how they attack it, and depends on what they're looking for. Because I think what could be interesting is I think we'll see some really amazing creativity. I think some people will try to use it as a distribution aggregate for a content they're doing on Twitch and YouTube. But I think that aside from the personalities, will fail. I think that you have to do content that's
unique to the platform.
Unique to the platform, original to the platform. I also think that everyone's missing this opportunity to use different platforms to show a different side of themselves.
What do you think Instagram is for? See, I think Instagram is for not the glitz and the glam, but a little bit more of the curated life. And then the Instagram stories is when you can just get as ratchet as you want. You know, I think Instagram story is, at least for me, the super casual, I don't really care. Occasionally I'll try to be aesthetic on the stories. But that kind of became my new Snapchat.
Yeah, no, I remember that, and I remember watching your transition there. Like, I don't know if I agree with it with glitz and glam, because for some people, and I think that's how it's been traditionally used, but I think that anytime somebody or a group of people or there's a normalization of something on the platform, it's only a matter of time before it flips on its head for disruption.
Right.
What I'm seeing is I'm seeing people be raw, people be vulnerable, people like going in their post and doing like, you know, no makeup, no filter, or going into literally rants in their post and everything like that. And people are drawn to it. Do you remember when Philip DeFranco used that phrase, polish versus texture? Basically, the short version is that anything that's too polished, too manicured, too produced feels fake, even if it's not. And stuff that is raw,
That's why YouTube personalities are winning, right?
Exactly, versus TV. But here's the thing. In the culture war of YouTube, people are trying either as creators to become more television, and the platform is trying to become more television. And it's stupid because it's already won and defeated television on the most fundamental level.
So why are we going back to the same exact thing? And that's why I feel like it has become almost so circular in a way of like, okay, YouTube, Netflix, it's the new thing, screw TV, but essentially we're just becoming TV on another platform. Like YouTube is just becoming TV on our phone. Mm-hmm. Everyone is doing scripted content. Everyone wants a new hit show with YouTube Red or Netflix or Hulu. And so what do you think is the type of content that will be able to stand out beyond that? Do you think vlogs are dead? Do you think vlogs have had their time?
I think vlogs will revert back to what they once were in the Zay Frank era of YouTube. For those of you not familiar, like that's the original godfather of vlogging. That would be essentially, that would be the Marlon Brando character to the De Niro character from The Godfather and everything like that. So in that analogy, Zay Frank is your godfather. He's Marlon Brando's character. Yeah. You know, he's Vito Corleone and everything like that. Casey would represent Michael in that equation.
Very cool. Yeah. Yeah, YouTube just seems to always be changing. And so you never know what is the right angle. And I think at the heart of it, you know, you have to stick to what you love and what you're good at. But then just the practices of distributing your content and the bells and whistles have to change along the way.
We're going to get back to art. We're going to get back to art and we're going to get back to raw storytelling because I think people, vlogging and like, I love the stuff that you do. I love what I'm seeing out of young creators like Audrey Emberley. Like, you know, she's another female filmmaker, like very reminiscent of your story in some ways, inspired by a lot by Peter McKinnon. And I feel like the era and the stuff what you guys do, because you're actual filmmakers, you'll always be able to transition and pivot because you never got away from storytelling in favor of editing. But I also see a point where because you guys are so good at it, your ability to get more out of less will evolve and take you back to a place of simplicity as your life changes, as you guys get like older. It's like I'm 34, so I've seen where this kind of like goes. I've seen what this, you know, and I know people who've been in YouTube that are older than me, and you find, you'll be surprised how much simplicity matters and how much once you've cultivated an audience and you've built up enough of an audience that is like down for you, that you find that you work harder emotionally and you work less at everything else over a given period of time and you can simplify.
I think that's something that I've been trying to get better at, but it's hard is getting more out of less. Or did you say that? Or did you say the opposite?
Getting more out of less.
I create so much stuff that I'm proud of, that's good. I spend so much time on it, but the only life that it lives is like a 2 day to 1 week window on my YouTube channel. And there's so much stuff, even like just from raw footage that I could make. It's not just taking that and cutting it down for other social medias. Like I could make unique content out of that footage for other social medias and let that have more of a life. But I don't know why. I feel like that just final product needs to be that you know, beautiful 10-minute video on YouTube with a bow on top, and anything else like might be watered down.
Do you feel like that's what's emotionally satisfying for you as an artist?
I think so, but at the same time, I think I always want more eyes on it. You know, I always want more people to engage with it. So if that means that, I mean, that's honestly why I think I started the podcast, is I want to be reasonable to my audience and know that, you know, people might not have the time to sit down 2 to 3 times a week and watch my video.
Right.
But once a week, they're going to have a commute in the car or the subway where they can listen to me.
No, that's real. And that's why I'm glad you like took the pivot to the podcast. That's where, even with me, I'm doing video podcasting now, but I'm still doing some audio only stuff because I can do that more frequently. And it's an interesting dichotomy to know that context of platform, that it's like, I can do a more curated show on YouTube, but I can go hard in expanding the archive and catalog and legacy value with that audio only podcast because it's easier to produce. I can do it much more ad hoc, still keep quality, but I may not have the access to make something interesting visually for it. So, you know, that I don't go there. And that's why I think context of platform matters. I think that's why people should diversify, is it's not about just getting more distribution for an individual piece of content or an idea. It's about getting more pieces of yourself out there. and about you having more freedom and control, I think, more than anything, to create on your own terms. I mean, do you get what I'm saying?
100%. And so by the time that you guys are listening to this or maybe watching it, I've probably made this video, but I'm doing like a series called How to Podcast. It's behind the scenes of my podcast. And so the next episode or an episode soon is kind of just breaking down the boring stuff of it, whether it's editing, distributing and stuff. And I've thought a ton about where this podcast should be. And so when I launched, I wanted it to have, like, I'm not concerned about sponsors. I'm not concerned about money. I just want ears and eyes on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think as a YouTuber, it was, it was an easy move for me to put it on YouTube. However, as I kind of am learning more about podcasts and also what brands are looking for, having a podcast on YouTube is still so foreign to them, and they really care only about listens. And something that I keep saying, but I haven't really applied in my life, is it's so important to have diversification in everything, and that includes distribution and your brand. And so this podcast, which is a perfect example of it should be a audio first driven content, I found myself pushing it more on YouTube. And so
Actually, I think you're correct to do it that way, because I subscribe to the Gary Vee thesis of video, if it's your strength, in your case, it very much is. If video is your strength, it's the easiest piece of top level content to then break down.
Right.
Because video is audio. Mm-hmm. Audio is words. Video is motion images. Right. It's stills.
Right.
So it's like, that is the most straightforward and simplest way to do it. Walking backwards from anything else is harder.
Let me hear your thoughts on what I'm thinking doing over the next couple weeks.
Sure.
And by the time that they're watching this, it might already be applied, actually.
And I'll probably have given you the secret sauce off camera beyond this.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. You can be raw and real here, man. I'll give you
some more depth later.
So what I was thinking is I really want to push the podcast hard on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify,
Stitcher,
with the audio. Yeah, wherever people listen to audio. And I think what really works on YouTube, and how I'm experiencing a lot of podcasts on YouTube and discovery, is I'm discovering clips more. I'm discovering the H3H3 clips that are super topical. Yep. You know, they release like 5 clips that are like 3 to 5 minutes from each show. And so I'm thinking
Joe Rogan does that as well.
Yeah. But he also posts the full episode. But I'm thinking like audio first, go listen to it. But then if you want to watch this interview and see us interact and watch the full episode, I'm actually thinking of putting the full episode video version on Patreon for like a very low dollar amount. Mm-hmm. And then for getting more awareness and eyes on it, literally just like posting clips to the YouTube channel that I've been posting to. Because when I started the YouTube channel, it was for discovery. I wanted people to discover the podcast, and putting the full episodes kind of limits as to what the titles can be, and it limits what people are clicking on. And so, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And there's so many reasons. I mean, the main reason is I want to build up. I mean, it's free to listen. You can listen to it anywhere. And so I think that makes the most sense where to drive the numbers. And I think that's where people, either brands or just in general, that like they associate podcasts with listens, you know? Mm-hmm. And then if people are super passionate about this video and they love seeing my face, you know, kind of building out a model outside of YouTube, because as a YouTuber, I don't want to get somber, but I truly do not believe in 5 years that it's going to be a platform for individual creators like ourselves.
I do think it will be if they have the talent, and we'll go to that another. And you have the talent. You have the talent. You have the staying power. Like, I believe 100%. Like, if I could literally buy equity in your brand, I would have already done it.
Should I do an ICO?
Like, no, if you had a Peachy Coin ICO and everything like that, I would have invested back when, like, you know, we first became homies back in like 2016.
Right. Back in the day.
Like, you know, especially pre like hardcore Instagram Sarah and everything, because you blew up there too. Like, I would have like, yeah, I would have got in early. I would have got in cheap and it's like, and I'd be very happy right now with your brand equity. Yeah. That being said, so here's my thoughts on the ruthless financial side of it. Is that you have a strong brand, the podcast and eyeballs by going audio first. Yes. And actually it's easier to sell sponsorships on audio first, even without the full blown statistics. And it's just a market that they understand. It's a much, it's matured. Mm-hmm. And with your overall social media amplification, they'll trust it on that. And you use that as part of the upsell, because again, they already, with the quality of guests that you get that have star power, that have notoriety and everything like that, it's like, you know, you're picking A-listers anyway, at least in the context of the social media and, you know, social entrepreneurship world. Mm-hmm. I mean, you led with Gary Vee, strongest punch, yeah, right? And you still have Casey Neistat waiting, yeah, in the wings somewhere. Yeah. So with that in mind, I think you do have something strong as a top line pitch for sponsorship, but I came from the world of marketing and advertising, which means I understand the importance of structuring packages and levels. Packages and levels are one of the biggest deals in terms of doing brand deals and long term. You don't sell them on one episode, you sell them on X amount of inventory for the year. Mm-hmm. And so you can get them to sponsor 5 or 6 or sponsor the month. Mm-hmm. Or like, and when you have a longer podcast, the H3H3 model, their podcast is so long, they can get 4 or 5 ad spots and, mm-hmm, ad reads out of it. You may not want to go, yeah, there. You might want to go 2 at most, maybe 3. Yeah. Some people do.
I mean, I'm not even worried about sponsors right now for the, sure, podcast. Not, yeah, right, like now. My, you know, of course in the future, but like, my YouTube channel, that's something that stands on its own. Like, mm-hmm, I have the pleasure of working with really cool brands there, and this podcast right now is literally like having it not rely on YouTube. That's something I actually really care about. And two, just getting as many listens as possible and just getting people really passionate about
it. You
could
use your current YouTube leverage though, mm-hmm, to get people to take a chance on the podcast in a bulk sponsorship sale of sponsoring your YouTube content and the podcast both on and off of YouTube, both, right, video and audio, as a way to get them comfortable and then negotiate something where you splinter something off for the podcast, mm-hmm, or where you use those sponsorships as proof of content. Because the reason I'm bringing up the ruthless business side is your podcast could become a six-figure brand. Your, mm-hmm, podcast become a six-figure brand between selling your own merchandise, the affiliate marketing side, mm-hmm, of it, if you do anything with that because of your kit.com stuff and all your camera gear and the podcast gear specifically for the video podcast as well. Mm-hmm. So, and because you have Amazon, you have BH, you have all these things. And then on top of that, you have the fact that with YouTube, both on the clip show and on the regular podcast, you got the ads. If you structure the video podcast on YouTube a certain way, if they're not a YouTube red person, it's fine to put more than one right, ad spot if you structure and format it to work with that, right, just like a television commercial. So
you think it's worth it to have the full episodes on YouTube?
I do, because watch time still matters in the algorithm. Mm-hmm. Session variable time still matters. And there are people who do those long binge YouTube, mm-hmm, sessions like that. I'm like that. A lot of people, yeah, really just play it like they would an audio podcast, but it's just, right, easier for them finding YouTube because it's a search engine.
Right.
And because, unfortunately, podcasting doesn't have a great desktop experience, but there are people who just have better speakers, mm-hmm, hooked up to their, yeah, computer or their TV or whatever.
It took 4 to 5 months to get monetization on my podcast channel. I just got it.
Yep.
And so the thought, it's such a pain just handling a second channel.
It is.
The thought of creating another one for clips is impossible to me.
I don't, like, think you do another one for clips. I know why people
do it. I would just
put
it on, yes, the same podcast.
Because guess what? Loops, session, like this is the algorithm hacking thing that I'm like good at. Mm-hmm. So session loops. Because what the reason, here's part of what, did you look at the new YouTube analytics dashboard data?
Mm-mm.
Oh, I have to show it to you, okay, after this. Okay, but like the new YouTube analytics dashboard channel data shows you unique visitors to a YouTube channel, which we never got before, click-through rates, mm-hmm, but also it shows you the average number of video views per user.
Okay, interesting.
So here's the thing. Because they're showing us that, we now know and have now confirmed what I've been saying for years, mm-hmm, about the algorithm. Everything I've been saying for years is now confirmed by data. Yeah. I can now point to it and say, because I was a Google Analytics guy in my marketing career, but when YouTube evaluates when you are, this is why Logan and Jake Paul were smart when they exploited the algorithm, is they can tell, YouTube can tell when your channel is responsible for people staying on YouTube longer, specifically. Mm-hmm. They can tell when your video is specifically responsible for keeping YouTube on people on YouTube longer. Mm-hmm. But they can also tell when your channel and when your videos get people to watch more videos, and you are favored and distributed more in YouTube, which means you'll see your YouTube impressions in this new dashboard data go up if you're hitting these specific goals and these markers. Retention rates, overall higher watch time, average viewed percentage durations, etc. The clip show will help you. The clip shows will help you get over 50% average view durations. Mm-hmm. They also help you get more video views on average per. It's kind of like in retail, average sales per transaction. Right, it's the same thing.
So do you not think that posting? So maybe I post one full episode a week, and then so I'm just posting like every weekday. So maybe like Monday it's full episode, and then Tuesday through Friday it's like a clip.
Yep.
Do you think that those 5-minute videos will mess up the watch time of someone watching like an hour podcast, maybe for half the time of 30 minutes?
I think it's the opposite, because the thing is, if the hour timestamp was intimidating to get them to commit to something, they can try before they buy, sample 5 minutes of that, because that's disposable time that they have. Because you always have, there's another thing that like I'm starting a conversation around that like no one's talking about, the concept of disposable watch time. The reason that the biggest YouTube stars have a largely young audience is because young people have the longest binge ability to watch YouTube. We have lives, like, but like when we were in school, we could throw 3 to 4 hours at a hobby a day. Mm-hmm. Like now, forget about it. Like this is our life now.
Right.
So
what do you think about, because basically my whole thinking with that is like, so much of my livelihood is wrapped up into YouTube. And then you see these things come along like Patreon with a subscription model that I've always been kind of wary of, just because it's like, okay, everything I do is behind the scenes content. So if I were to put that stuff behind a paywall, that would just be my content. That doesn't make sense.
No.
So that's why with the podcast, I'm like, oh, I can actually offer an actual product that's like real value of like the full episode.
So it could be that it's early, or because access, like, so a lot of people mistake the whole Patreon model. So for, here's another thing that you can do. There's a lot of cool stuff that you can do. We talked about like the idea of digital products. Mm-hmm. Without going quite to a digital product yet, there's enough things digitally that you produce that people in your community would be curious enough about to want access of, to say that that's worth $5. I would say reverse engineer the DeFranco Elite version of doing Patreon and think about it more transactionally, but also think about a ladder of support tiers, structure them, tie things to them. And I would take it and separate it from your main general content, but then also more about things that you like make that may not be a finished product that go to market. Things like, there's things artistically that you do just as a photographer.
So you don't think that that subscription model is for finished products? Because I guess for me, like,
I don't think it has to be.
Because like as a consumer, I don't care about getting things early. I'm like, I will view
some
them.
People,
and so,
yes,
so
some
I'm like, why would people care about that? So that's
there,
why
there are
I
people
have
who
a,
do, but I'm not one of them.
Right.
There is a market of people that, but it also depends on who the personality is. Some people just have a fixation with being first.
Right.
Gary Vee, first in line.
Yeah.
Like, so there's, but like, I don't love that whole exclusivity model on that. For an exclusivity model on content, I believe in membership sites. I mean, but that's also if you're like an educator or a trainer or something like that. Less so of an entertainer, unless you're using the pay-per-view model. Mm-hmm. Like if I was Liza Koshy before she got a YouTube Red series, I would have done a Patreon and done live stand-up comedy for my audience as a YouTube live stream, but make it exclusive and make it basically you buy tickets to that every month. Like I do my own comedy hour, I would have branded, I would have made a big thing. Higher tiers also get merch sent to them included in the package. I would have made a whole thing out of it, right?
Right.
That's a different business model. This is like the thing that I'm really good at is like coming up with these. Like here's something that I'm starting to come up with for people because we have the new little sponsor button on YouTube. Like there are people who are just doing it to do it and just to support me, but my new thing is like, okay, cool. I'm a Photoshop guy. I'm gonna make cool desktop wallpapers and artwork. Mm-hmm. Like the thing I haven't done in a long time is just shown people my artwork and my like creative like skill, because it's stuff I've just been hoarding for myself and putting up, like planning to print out and put the posters in my room of my own artwork. And some of my stuff that got featured in magazines back in the day. But like, giving my audience something that, like, oh, I gave you like a dope wallpaper pack for your phone and desktop this month that's themed on something related to our community or to my brand, and it's exclusive. That's like a really nice thank you. I tied my Patreon to my podcast instead of my YouTube channel. And what I do there sometimes is, yeah, it is the early stuff. Sometimes it's also unreleased things where I've realized, like, you know what? Maybe to distribute to the world, I'm not satisfied with the quality on a technical level of this thing, but the content itself was so good, I want somebody to see it. And so the Patreon people get some exclusivity there of things mm-hmm. that I won't put out into the world. So, I mean, there's you, like, I will definitely help you figure out this in a granular way, like offline, just as a homie, but like just think differently and think bigger about it beyond YouTube, because the thing that you have that a lot of people don't have is you're a real media company. You are like me. You're like me. You're like Gary. You're a media company embodied in an individual, right? Mm-hmm. That's a unique skill. But unlike Gary, you and I are both technicians and artists. So in addition to being the talent, we don't necessarily have to get a team of 20 people to be able to churn out and produce different things. You talked about Instagram being curated. You have the ability. I'm not telling you to go out and do a magazine, but I'm pointing out that if you wanted to launch a magazine, a digital magazine, you have the capacity, the capability, you might not have the bandwidth right now mm-hmm. without two people helping, but it would basically come down to two people helping and mm-hmm. come down to a ghostwriter in aggregate of your lifestyle, and then you'd have the peachy mag. Like mm-hmm. that's literally how turnkey it would be for you.
Right.
Because like I look at these hard drives and I look at your Instagram and I know how many photos didn't get posted.
Yeah.
Like so
ain't that the truth.
But so you literally would have the ability to curate mm-hmm. a lifestyle magazine for 20 something year olds.
Like right.
easily between all your travel and all the other things mm-hmm. and being in the greatest city in the world
right.
and all the dope people that you know, like mm-hmm. it would be easy for you to do something
so
like that.
So when it comes to all of those individual products, and you know, I know a lot of people out there probably have so many ideas of what they want to do, and you know, it's my advice to always start small, start with one thing and then expand. But when you get to a place like me where I, you know, life is busy, life is fun.
Don't manage two YouTube channels. Literally put someone in charge of the other one. You produce the content.
Yeah, I have a hard time letting go, but that's something I'm learning right now.
Trust me, I'm there right now.
Yeah.
Anything that's mechanical, get rid of it. Save all of your energy for the art. I'm a control freak,
mm-hmm.
but I now finally got into a place where I'm like, if this was an automation, I would have just put a robot in charge of it already.
Yeah.
If this was software, I would have already given it. I would like, mm-hmm. for as much as I'm a control freak, I realize how much I've given to software. And I'm mm-hmm. like, I would give this to software. So if I find a human being as an intermediate thing while I wait out 2 years for the Terminator to come do it, I'm like,
a Terminator assistant.
Yeah.
Don't we all need Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah. So
checking
our
emails.
I just want to create awesome things. I just want to do dope stuff. I want all of my energy to go into mm-hmm. art and thinking about the business.
Because I think farther along you get, the less you honestly work on the art part. So recently, I found myself so there's this really good article from the Y Combinator co-founder. It was written like 8 years ago, 8 or 9 years ago, but it talks about the maker versus the manager schedule. And I had the biggest aha moment when I read it, because I finally figured out what was wrong with me right now and why I was having such a hard time sitting down and editing. Because previously when I was in college, I would have the block of time of 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. or 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. to only edit and only work on, you know, art. But now my day is just segmented off in these hours and random, like I'll have a meeting here and then like 2 hours in between of nothing and then another meeting or a phone call. But those 2 hours, sometimes it takes me just 4 or 5 hours of sitting there and like thinking for an hour, getting into the editing flow for an hour. And then that I know that I have 4 hours after that, then that's when I get into an editing flow. But meetings can just like mess you up so much. And that's, read the article, guys. It's basically maker versus manager, because a manager schedule is siphoned off into hours that can be interchangeable, and that's that. They're just blocks, and if one thing gets canceled, they can replace it and be fine. But the creator schedule, the maker schedule, is siphoned off into bigger chunks. They need 4 to 5 hours to work, you know?
Exactly.
And so when I had that realization, I was like, oh my God, I'm a maker. Like, I need those chunks of time.
You know, that's why Lily Singh built a team around herself to just go back to that.
Right, because you have to protect that, and that's mm-hmm. what I'm finding having right now. So when it comes to the, so say, you know, someone's out there, they're either an entrepreneur or a creator, maybe they have a 9-to-5 and they have a decent income coming in, but they want to start a passion project. They want to start Peachy Mag, you know?
Right.
Do you think that it is, like, what do you think is the best practices to support it on a platform that's already a thing? So, like, you know, the Patreon model, where using an already existent platform to maybe put a paywall up, or
are
to
you
use
about financially or logistically?
Financially, or and logistically, in terms of like, you know, let's just use Peachy Mag for an example. Mm-hmm. So, say I wanted to do a once a month digital magazine.
Yep.
Would it be smartest and logistically the best to go straight to my subscribers and build my own platform and do it that way? Or do I put it behind a paywall of an already existent website that people are familiar with?
Do you think
there's advantage
of
familiarity?
So I know exactly what to do in this situation. In this situation, you go to the existing digital distribution centers. The existing digital distribution centers, in this case, being Apple Books actually has magazines, and also, of course, Amazon. And Amazon has digital magazine distribution, but you also have the ability for them to get it directly from you via the owned and operated, as the aggregate, though, of get it directly from us or at any and all of these things. The same way that with a podcast, this is why most podcasters have a website. They have a website and they use the media hosting as distribution through something like, they get a host like Libsyn or SoundCloud or whoever, but it's distributed to all the places where podcasts are consumed. Right. But they have this host owned and operated website that is their own, that is branded, where there they can get people to sign up to the email list, they can get people to buy the merchandise, they can get people to stay and have traffic on their website. They can, you know,
Do you think having a website is still worth it?
I believe it. I know that in social media land that, like, a lot of people are skeptical about websites, but, like, at the end of the day, these platforms, the algorithms are getting much more ruthless and more demanding. It's a content treadmill, as a lot, or a hamster wheel, however you want to think about it, and it's horrible. And the other thing is, though, if you step out of line with the vision of the platform in any way, they can silence you, whether that is by not surfacing your content or banning you outright. That's a scary thought when you put a lot of your time, effort, energy, and your financial stability wrapped up in these platforms. So having that thing that you own the most, that's why, again, I made a big pivot from the amount of content I was doing. You saw it in 2017 through 2018. I've taken a nosedive in how much content I put out. I'm producing probably as much, if not more, but I'm not releasing as much, but, you know, more on that later. Mm-hmm. But I focused in the shadows without even talking about it to my main audience on building another owned and operated website on top of other microsites that I own and my own, you know, personal brand site. I built AwesomeCreatorAcademy.com specifically, so I was like, I own this platform. It's now going to consolidate my coaching business instead of it just being feeling too random. Get a hold of me and, like, let's do a deal. No, I put a buy button in place and put a process and automation there. Robots. Right? So I put automations in place. I now hired a support person to do human support emails instead of an automation for those emails. It was great. And I hired a virtual assistant specifically around my coaching and keeping those appointments and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. I put courses in place recently. I put a digital download product, the YouTube Starter Kit, out there. And it does like 8 to 12K a month in revenue. Mm-hmm. I could literally leave YouTube tomorrow. I wouldn't, but... Right. And the way my YouTube channel works, I would keep growing regardless, but because evergreen. But the thing about it is, I specifically never have to worry about a platform now because I have something that I own and operate, and I can always buy ads if I need distribution. Mm-hmm. But I'm also a search engine hacker, so
So let's talk about this, Creator Academy.
Okay.
Did you start the sales and kind of, you know, putting it out there on your YouTube channel, and then you went into Google Ads and stuff like that? Or what is the kind of like game plan that you set forth when you started to create this? Because obviously you have the built-in audience with YouTube, right?
But I didn't leverage it.
Okay, interesting. So tell me about the process of starting that and distributing it.
Now, I would tell anyone else to leverage their largest audience, but I'm a glutton for punishment, and I like challenges, and I like pain. Something's fundamentally wrong with me. Maybe it's because I grew up watching all those Rocky and Karate Kid movies.
Nice.
But the thing is, I wanted, I think, to prove for myself that YouTube wasn't a crutch for me. And I think there's a little bit of me that wanted to stick it to some haters too. And I used my smallest platforms. I used Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And before I got my Instagram to 10K even, to really get this out there. And I used one-on-one conversations and conferences. And I started with the membership group. I think I started at like 29 a month or something like that. And I handpicked and hand recruited people that was like, hey, do you want to be a part of like this?
What mentoring? Is your membership group?
So it's a mentoring collective. It's kind of like a mastermind. So it's a mentoring collective. We have like 100 members right now. And the way it works is there's exclusive content in the back end of the website that's only for the subscribed members. And there's also some download assets, templates, like email swipe files, different resources. And the idea with Awesome Creator Academy is it's either for people building their personal brand. So it might be someone who is a YouTuber, but let's say they're not good at business. This would be helpful to them. Or if it's someone that's good at business, but not good at content, then this would be helpful to them. It's the opposite ends of that spectrum. I can bridge those two things, right? So we have people in there that are like 6 or 7 figure business owners that what they want to do is they want to do a podcast or they want to do a YouTube channel or both. Or we have people that are moving from brick and mortar and want to digitize, like McCann Dogs. Biggest thing in Toronto when it comes to dog training, right? And so the head marketer for McCann Dogs is in Awesome Creator Academy, and they actually built out a digital product that did very well lucratively, and they're scaling that. They're creating more products, more SKUs now. So it's fantastic for them to have a brick and mortar thing that they were to take all the knowledge and all the production value of having a physical location, and then in aggregate make something for people remotely that can't even get to them or they're out of that, not even in Toronto.
So basically you start with that select group of people,
yeah,
put it out to them, and then that's after that you expanded to your other socials.
That with membership, and then one-on-one coaching is people coming to me directly. So now I just had an easier way for them to like set an appointment, pay a price, put it on a calendar. Like it made it more seamless, it made it more automated. So it was consolidating the services of coaching and then this new thing that I was doing that I'd never done before, a collective group mentoring program with a private Facebook group, exclusive content, and exclusive group mastermind video conferencing, right? So it was a business model that's similar to things Chris Ducker, Lewis Howes. There are a few people with these type of groups. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm also one of them. But a lot of us also belong to each other's groups too. That's another interesting thing. There are some other YouTube experts in my group, for example. There are some other creative entrepreneurs, designers, you know, different people. Mm-hmm. And it's peer mentoring. I have a leadership role, but there are also other people who've stepped up, and it's collective learning. And then again, it's also exclusivity and access to me. People in this group know they're a priority to me. And by the way, this isn't a sales pitch. I'm telling you guys, literally steal my business model, there are people who have come from my group that have launched their own groups, and they're still in my group paying to be in my group because they want to know how to make their own group better. So but that was one thing. And then we went into product development. Like in November, I did the YouTube starter kit, download templates. Cause I took my skill. I'm a graphic designer. Everyone sucks at YouTube thumbnails. You need thumbnails to get clicks. Over 160 assets, $99, steal, ran coupons, didn't do paid ads. Without pushing with paid ads, cause I wanted to see how could this perform without me pushing paid ads. So over the course of, I'd say, I guess 6 months since launch, I think it's done with, even with the coupons, like $30K in revenue. So it's like $30,000 on a like $99 or less product that I didn't throw ads at. I'm optimizing and learning how the ads funnel is going to work. I've set up a new marketing funnel on a free training for stuff that could also support this product and other YouTube related products. And I think that when I get ready to run ads, once I figure out the pricing model through my experiments, I run ads to that free training, get people into a list, and also offer them coupons if they complete the 4 training videos that are free and other free resources and things. But also, I hacked affiliate marketing into this. I hacked things with giving more value add to my sponsors from my YouTube channel and from my podcast, premium placement in things in my products as a reference. And so it's a multi-tiered model.
Yeah,
it's a multi-tiered model. It's like when I look at launching something, I think about 5 to 10 ways that it could make money to support itself so that it just has more legs to stand on. And I'm trying to teach more people to do that. That's where the shift in my content strategy is even going is there are so many people with talent why aren't they making money? And it's because people aren't talking to them honestly about like how to make money on the thing that they love without feeling like a sellout. Let the people who want to buy something, give them the option to buy. Give them as many options to buy and go as deep with you as they want.
So for people out there who they're listening to you, they're, you know, they're jazzed. Yeah, let's do this. But still, it's intimidating to them. They're hearing all these words. Okay, maybe I'm unfamiliar with this. Where do I even start? If you're an artist or maybe you have a business idea or you have that brick and mortar model, you know, in 2018, digital products and providing value online, it just instantly, you can go global with things. It's just like the sky's the limit, right? So for the people who are intimidated, what would you tell them should be their first step beyond joining your groups to get it out?
No. Like that's actually not even the first step. I feel like there's qualifiers for that. That's why free content still matters so much to me. It's like not everybody needs to be in my membership group. That's for people just like not everybody needs to go to college and get hands-on. Some people can read a book. I'm writing books for
people who just watch YouTube videos.
Or listen to podcasts or audiobooks. I'm making stuff for people like that too, both free and paid. There are some people they need to buy something to use it. There are free books sitting in my Kindle that I've never read because they were free. Everything I paid for, though, I read cover to cover. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like Lily Singh's book, How to Be a Boss, right? Cover to cover in 2 days. Like, there's something to that. So my first thing is invest in yourself. If there are tools you think you need or resources to do the thing that you want to do, get those tools and get those resources because, like, I know, like, one of my friends, he recently bought a new laptop. And now he's working harder than he ever worked because he was dreading going to this slow, stupid laptop that was so painful to edit on that he would have to like compromise and he'd have to pray for his renders, like literally would pray for his renders. And then he got a new laptop. Now he's working and hustling harder than he ever has. And he feels good about it. But he also feels good about it because he freelanced and hustled for 2 weeks to get this laptop, specifically to get it in time to do another gig.
Yeah.
A big gig he knew he couldn't do on the laptop he had. So he fought for it. He hustled and he's so happy they did, right? So if you're out there and you're intimidated, I would say baby steps, simple steps, and audit it. Do it and see if it's not as bad. You and I just did your first newsletter and you were super intimidated.
I got, you know, peachy newsletter. I just announced new peachy merch.
Right on.
If it's still on sale by the time that you're watching this, link in the description below. But I, you know, promised the people who signed up for the newsletter, you would get an exclusive first look, you know, chance to buy it. And I gave out a $50 coupon code.
Right.
And so, yeah, I had to send out a newsletter, but I never sent it out before on MailChimp. And so it was nerve-wracking for some reason, even though they have the templates, it's easy. But, you know, I had Roberto here and I was like, you've probably sent out a newsletter. You want to help me real quick? And we did it in like 30 minutes. And it was so, so easy. And I think it's taking the step.
And like when we did it from scratch, I mean literally every single thing.
I had to like edit the pictures that were in there and stuff.
Yeah, otherwise it probably would have taken like 8 minutes.
Yeah,
like, if everything was already done. But now that you know, like nothing. Now you could do it like without me being here. But you like it was, wasn't it nicer to have somebody hands on to walk you through it?
Yes.
Because you could have watched a tutorial, but I don't know that you would have followed through as easily or as quickly.
It's always easier with the hands on for sure.
And see, that's why even where remotely, sometimes a coach or training, like there's things where I will like, you know, I haven't ever had like a coach, but it's like I've gone into webinars to get a training on something or I've watched a live demo for a tool before because I'm like, if I see someone do it with my own eyes, then I feel more confident.
Right.
But I can do that remotely. There are some people that they physically have to be in the room. That's why they go to college. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
And there's something for everyone.
That's the hack though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Make something for people so that they have the option. Like you want to do something, think about an option that you didn't have before and what it would have meant to you to have that option. That's why I ended up making the content I ended up making. That's why I built the business that I built. It's like, wow, that would have been helpful to me 20 years ago.
Right,
that would have been helpful to me 10 years ago. That would have been helpful to me 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, oftentimes it's what you're seeking out is that's what you're going to succeed in making.
Yeah.
So heck yeah. Roberto, thanks for being on the Creative Exchange.
Yeah, absolutely.
Such an honor to have you. And guys, all of his links are in the show notes below. It's so fun to just like talk shop with you. I feel like this was a therapy session for me.
Yeah,
like,
no.
you know, I was over here taking notes for my own self. So hopefully it applies to you guys. I know there's a lot of, you know, people who are doing YouTube or maybe aspirational YouTubers, but this does not just apply to YouTube.
No,
there's so many things to apply across the board.
Well, if I'm going to leave anybody with a message, like part of it would be like, I know that you're watching two YouTubers on a YouTube like podcast, or you're listening to us right now and you know us from the YouTube world, but like, the narrative of like being a YouTuber has gotten too sexy. It's gotten out of hand. Yeah. And I think it's undermining.
It's not about Lambos, Jake Paul.
It's really not. But it's like for most of us, it's really not. It's like, even people with gold play buttons, though, I talk to a lot of creators at different levels. Like I talk to people with like 1,000 subscribers, 10 million subscribers. And like, there's a common theme of anxiety. And I'm like, we've had this conversation about the mental health of the YouTube community. I did that response to Casey and L. Mills about like the pressures of being YouTube. Like so many people did their responses. And one of the things I would say is like the YouTube thing, it is too sexy. It's the only platform where you get a trophy. It's the easy quote unquote ad revenue that's not easy and doesn't really exist except for some people. Mm-hmm. And like, the narrative and this goal of being a YouTuber, I'm not trying to discourage anyone so much to say it's not what you think it is, just like anything else, until you actually are in it and the reality like really shows up for you. And it's not always a bad thing and it's not always scary, but it's like it'll be more work than you think and you won't always get what you thought you would out of it. But there are so many of you that your talent isn't video anyway. You just want to be a YouTuber and be part of the community. You might be better at doing a podcast or a Twitch stream or being an Instagrammer or actually being an actor or actress and using some other platform to get that attention and break out and everything. Like, there are so many avenues to deploy. There are so many things that you can do, and there are new platforms that are emerging, and maybe they last, maybe they don't, but there are people, Vine didn't last, but look what happened. People made their brand on it. Like, I know marketers who broke out in platforms that are long dead that you've never heard of, like Blab and Meerkat, Periscope, rest in peace. Or soon enough anyway.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there are people like Snapchat is in decline unless something else happens. But how many people like my friend Sean Duras, and how many people like Cyrene Q and Ginny Can Breathe and Sean Ayala, like how many people broke out and made a name for themselves because they were on the platform while it was hot? Like, be an early adopter, be curious, be hungry. Don't like look at YouTube as something that's make or break for you, because there's a lot of us that like, yeah, we found success here, but we can see a time where this shouldn't be our priority anymore. Some of us sooner than others. And like, this is real. And I still think at the end of the day, use it as a tool, use it as leverage. No matter what happens with YouTube and the algorithm and everything like that, it's going to hell as it is. It's, for me, still free marketing and still the best personal branding platform, with Instagram being a very close second that might actually steal first any day now.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm like, I'm not down. I'm not depressed about like YouTube being a flaming dumpster fire right now, which it is. But my message to you guys out there is like, it's about optimism and realism. It's about the fact that it's like, we're fortunate enough that video is a strength of ours, but we've got more than one skill under our belt. And for a lot of you, I'm not convinced that video is the top tier thing you can do. I think there's a lot of
If you don't love video, it is the wrong thing to jump in with two feet. If you have the confidence that you can do it and you have a passion in life and video is the way you're going to get it out, then maybe partner up with someone or watch tutorials and learn it if it's something that you can love. But if you know you hate it, video is too time consuming,
especially alone, if you go it alone.
Exactly. I mean, those are amazing words to end on. Roberto, thank you for joining me on the Creative Exchange, guys. Every single Monday. Check out Roberto's links in the show notes below. Until next time, guys, stay peachy, keep creating, and thanks, Roberto.
Thank you.